Chapter 52, The Dark Reign of Herod the Great. Valiant and brave, young Herod steps out upon the stage of public life like a prince of chivalry. There was nothing in his opening career to indicate that his name would go down in history blackened with crime. At the early age of 15, he found Galilee infested with robbers. It was an evil the people had long endured, but there were few who cared to risk their lives by hunting them in their secret hiding places in the wilderness and mountain passes. But the brave young Herod volunteered to lead out a pursuing company, and he was singularly successful. He tracked them down, killed their captain and strong leaders, and broke up the fierce bands. He became so popular that his splendid deeds were told in song and story, not only in Galilee, but in Judah, Syria, and other neighboring countries. Herod was the able son of a clever father. Antipater was a master of skill and policy. He was not a Jew, but originally of the Edomites, those old enemies, a part of whom had settled in southern Judah during the captivity. Antipater most skillfully wrapped himself around the power which promised to lead. The first person he courted was the high priest, Hyrcanus. He made himself so lovable to him that the high priest looked on him as a dear brother. Hyrcanus was supposed to be the chief ruler, but Antipater saw to it that he himself was the real power. When Rome came in, Antipater became so useful to that great power that he was regarded as a very desirable friend, and he was made ruler over Judah, Galilee, and Samaria. He then had the governorship of Galilee transferred to his young son, Herod, who had already endeared himself to the people. Herod was not a whit behind his father in ability and policy. He followed carefully in his father's footsteps at the outset, but he was soon able to map out a vigorous course for himself. He started out to please and pacify and became immensely popular. The leading Jews were roused to jealousy. Here was a man not of the Jews, lording over their land and even over their high priest. Hyrcanus was blind, they said, and they began planning to depose Herod. They trumped up a charge against him on the ground that he had killed the robber bands without the consent of the Sanhedrin, the Supreme Court. Perhaps there were graver charges, but history does not mention them. Herod was accused and called before the Sanhedrin for trial. The young ruler turned to his father, Antipater, for counsel. That shrewd man advised him to go before the Jews, but in a way that would be both safe and imposing. The dignified court had assembled and were ready for the culprit. The faces of the members expressed the severity which would be shown to the alien ruler. Promptly, the young governor appeared before them. He came as a king of royal rank, dressed in purple and with a strong bodyguard. To Hyrcanus, the high priest and head of the Supreme Court, he presented a letter from Rome commanding his protection of the young favorite. The Jews were overawed, and those who were to bring up the charges were silent. Only one had the courage to rise and denounce them for their cowardice. He declared that this Herod, whom they spared, would not in the future spare them. We shall see how well the future bore him out. Julius Caesar, who had been assisted in his Egyptian campaigns by Antipater, extended his gratitude to the son Herod. When Caesar's friend Antony came to the front, he found in Herod a friend. The two men were sufficiently alike to be congenial, and besides, the pleasure-loving Antony found an additional attraction in Herod's liberal payments of money, which were always so acceptable to the extravagant Roman. Octavius finally succeeded his uncle, Julius Caesar. In the changes that took place, there had been an uprising in Palestine, and Herod had been imprisoned. With his usual good luck, he escaped and made his way to Rome. By his friend, Antony, he was presented to Octavius and was quickly taken into his good graces as well. These two rulers brought him before the Roman Senate and recommended him for the throne at Jerusalem. The Senate quickly elected him to that position, and then Herod was escorted into the capital between the two royal friends, where heathen sacrifices were offered to consecrate him king of Judah. If Herod did not blush with shame, it was because he lost sight of the Jews and their God in the triumph of the hour. After a week of banquets and celebrations in the imperial city of Rome, Herod departed for Jerusalem, loaded with kingly honors and supported by a Roman guard. He had left as an escaped prisoner, fleeing by obscure ways, hiding and skulking when pursuing parties might be near. But his return was the march of a conqueror. As soon as he entered his old realm, he began to raise an army. The people were awestruck at the sight of the proud king, and many fell in willingly with such a display of power. His own Galilee was quickly subdued, but when he drew up before Jerusalem, he met with resistance. He laid siege to the city. A Roman army came to his assistance, and together they turned their destructive forces on the fortification. The Jewish people stubbornly resisted their unwelcome king, and before he could effect an entrance, the rival party had held the throne 3 years. When the walls finally gave way, the Roman soldiers rushed in to pillage and destroy. Jerusalem seemed doomed to destruction. This was altogether contrary to Herod's wishes, who needed both city and people. He called to the leaders to stop their soldiers in the wholesale slaughter of inhabitants and destruction of property. "Would you make me king of an empty desert place?" he cried in despair. To save the city, he had to pay out a large sum of money to the Roman destroyers. The king secured his throne, and after this the world saw another side of his nature. The Herod of history began to appear. The ruler who might have won his title of great by able deeds became great chiefly in cruelty and bloodshed. His first care was to destroy the family of the royal high priesthood. He had married Mariamne, a beautiful woman who belonged to this line, but that did not stop him. Her brother Aristobulus, as heir to the office of high priest, became an object of suspicion and hatred. This youth Aristobulus was of unusual beauty. The people wondered at his striking appearance, and heathen admirers said that he looked like the sons of the gods. Herod feared his strong hold on the people's affections and resolved not to admit him into the office of high priest. But he was yet under the full power of his beautiful wife, Mariamne, and she pleaded so well for her brother that the king relented, and Aristobulus was elevated to his inherited rank. When the young high priest appeared for the first time in a public service, the people were carried away with enthusiasm. This magnificent youth was of their own race and in the ruling line, and the inspiration of the hour was upon them. Herod's eyes narrowed in an evil way when he saw their looks of affection and delight. He secured accomplices to do his bidding. On a festive occasion, Aristobulus was persuaded to go in bathing with some young companions and was drowned. It was an accident, they said, and Herod joined the people in their loud lamentations. Herod's cruelty grew with his crimes. His lovely wife, Mariamne, was accused and put to death as a traitor. As soon as she was gone, Herod was nearly crazed with grief and remorse, but he kept on in his murderous course. The two sons of Mariamne fell under his suspicions. They were brought to trial, convicted, and strangled to death. This murder of his own sons caused the people to hate, more than ever, their monster king. His supreme desire was to make his kingdom strong and powerful, and he succeeded in raising it to a high state of wealth and prosperity. In his saner moments, he tried to please the people. His visit to Rome showed him what the rulers there did to become popular, and he set up Roman ways in Jerusalem. He built a theater where pagan music and plays were heard, and in the suburbs of Jerusalem, a large amphitheater was erected where gladiators and wild beasts fought for the entertainment of the people, and all sorts of heathen games were played. These delighted the people of Rome and endeared their rulers to them, and Herod did not understand that the people of the holy city were different. To still further pattern after Rome, he built for himself in Jerusalem a magnificent palace of the costliest materials, such as graced the banks of the Tiber. The Jews were hard to pacify. They could not forget that this king was not of their race, and they shuddered at his unnatural crimes. To this serious-minded people, their old, simple life remained a background against which these mad revelries and sports were but a mockery. The king's desire for popularity clung to him to the last. It was not hard to see that the people disliked him, and to win their favor he undertook great building operations. Surely these would appeal to their national pride. He built up the walls around Jerusalem and repaired the city. He made new and strong fortifications throughout the land and strengthened old ones. He restored Samaria, which had long lain in ruins. One last and most successful attempt to gain the goodwill of the people was to propose to replace their modest temple with one more like Solomon's. This last was a masterstroke, but the people doubted his purpose. He would tear down our temple to destroy our religion, they thought, and only after he had much of the material brought in for the new temple was he allowed to touch the old one. Herod's wicked life was drawing to a close, but he was guilty of one more cruelty. In the very last of this dark reign, the Savior was born, and Herod put out his hand to destroy this promise of Judah. We are all familiar with the story of the three wise men from the east who came to find the child Jesus. When Herod heard of the search, he was troubled. They asked for the king of the Jews, whose star they had seen. Was it possible that one had come to claim the throne of Judah? With a cunning made perfect by long practice, he became all sympathy and interest in their presence. Where was the child to be born? He asked with solicitude, and he let them depart with instructions to return and tell him where the young king could be found, that he too might go to worship him. The wise men did find him, but they did not return to report to Herod that the king of the Jews was lying helpless in a manger at Bethlehem. Instead, they quietly returned to the far east by another way. Herod was furious when he saw how he had been outwitted. Not being able to designate any particular child, he issued a decree to have all male children under 2 years of age put to death. It was done, and a great cry of sorrow went up from Bethlehem and its borders. But the child Jesus was safe in Egypt. Herod's ravings were soon at an end, and death claimed him at last. His reign had been a dark one, but the newly risen star of the east shone only clearer as it gave promise of another kingdom, a spiritual one, which includes not only the nation of the Israelites, but all the nations of the earth.